For more than 40 years, anti-Cuba organizations based in Miami have engaged in countless attacks against Cuba, killing more than 3,000 people. In an effort to curtail further violence, five men were assigned to monitor the right-wing exile groups responsible for launching these terrorist attacks against Cuba. In September of 1998, the FBI arrested the Cuban Five, illegally held them for over 17 months in solitary confinement in Miami jails. They were accused of committing espionage against the United States, and in December of 2001, they were sentenced to 4 life terms and 45 years collectively. This December, Cuban President Raul Castro offered the U.S. a deal to exchange imprisoned Cuban dissidents in return for the Cuba Five jailed in the United States. Castro has also renewed his calls for talks with the incoming president-elect Barack Obama. Joining me to talk about the Cuba Five are Gloria LaRiva. Gloria is coordinator of the National Committee to Free the Cuban Five. Gloria, good morning.
Good morning, Philip.
And also joining us is Richard Clue, who has been involved in the case of the Cuban Five ever since 1998 when they were arrested. He's the attorney for one of the Cuba Five, Fernando Gonzalez. Richard Clue, good morning.
Good morning.
So, Gloria LaRiva, tell us about Raul Castro's offer. Is this a change in policy from the Cuban government?
Well, it's interesting. The whole speech, was taken out of context by some of the Western press. And his whole speech, he was asked about, well, what moves will Cuba do to, for the U.S. to start talking and dialoguing with Cuba? And Raul said, you know, we're through with unilateral gestures. And he was asked about political prisoners in Cuba, and he said, look, you name the people that you want to have released and all their families, and we will send them to the United States. We'll let them go. You name anybody that you want. Just return us our five Cuban heroes. And I think that the most important thing about his speech was that because it was Raul speaking, it traveled around the world. And the need for the case of the five is that people in the world begin to know that there are five men in prison in the U.S. for fighting terrorism.
So, Richard Clue, maybe you should explain what the mission of the Cuba Five were. They were Cuban patriots that came to the United States, came to Miami for what purpose?
They were involved in essentially investigating and keeping track of a very wide range of organizations. There is one of the things you find when you look into the exile community, the Cuban exile community in South Florida, is the proliferation of entities is remarkable. And there are so many entities involved in so many different aspects of anti-Cuba activity that they really spent a large part of their time just trying to delve into those various entities, try to obtain information and keep track of what was going on.
Gloria, in the trial, they were found guilty of acting as unregistered agents of a foreign government in other charges. What do these charges bring? Is this like they were accused of being spies?
Well, they were never accused of actual espionage, but conspiracy to commit espionage and conspiracy to commit murder, which was leveled against Gerardo Hernandez. And it's a very complex, it's an outrageous charge. None of these have any basis. The one thing that the defense did agree was that they did use false identification and failed to register with the then U.S. Attorney General, who was John Ashcroft, actually Janet Reno. But to be successful agents in infiltrating these groups at the U.S. backs, you couldn't exactly announce yourself to Washington. Those charges of failure to register and using other documents than your own are relatively minor charges. The big two were the espionage conspiracy and murder conspiracy. Again, no basis for that charge. And conspiracy, you know, ever since the Chicago conspiracy case, the Chicago 8, it's a favorite tool of the prosecutor when there, in fact, may be no crime committed. And the men were, in fact, not committing espionage on the U.S. They had no interest in U.S. national security. What their interest was stopping terrorist organizations in Miami.
Richard, conspiracy to commit murder, what was that about?
Well, what you see with the Cuban Five is that they became, for practical purposes, the face of the Cuban government. And there was an effort to attribute to them actions, any actions that would otherwise be attributable to the government itself. And in one instance, one of the organizations that was undertaking provocative and illegal actions in relation to Cuba was an organization operated by Jose Basulto that conducted overflights over Havana, illegal overflights, dropped objects over Havana. In the course of trying to respond to the actions of this group, Cuba had warned that they were not going to tolerate continued territorial invasions. And Gerardo Hernandez passed on those warnings to the members of the Cuban group that were here to be aware that Cuba is going to take these violations seriously in the future, was accused of, in effect, conspiring to attack these overflight airplanes by the fact that he had warned other agents to stay off the airplanes. It's completely unique, unheard of theory. Throughout the appeal, for example, the government never cited a single example where this theory had ever been used to sustain a conviction in any other context, much less in the context of an agent of a government who simply was warning other agents, to stay off these airplanes.
So, just to repeat what you just said, we're talking about anti-Castro Cubans using small planes to overfly Havana and other portions of Cuba in violation of the airspace of Cuba, dropping leaflets, etc. And the Cuban government warned Washington to stop these guys, and then when they didn't stop them, they shot down one of these planes. How many people died in that?
They did shoot down two of the planes. There was a squadron of aircraft that went over on a very important national holiday in Cuba, in which a lot of people were out on the street, and it was in a very provocative effort to create unrest in Cuba. And Cuba was prepared for it and took action and shot down two planes. Four people died, and again, there was never any suggestion that there was information conveyed to any of the five that these planes would be exactly what would happen to these planes, or much less any suggestion that any action taken by Cuba would be in any sense unlawful. And nevertheless, because they become the face of Cuba, there's a classic effort to attribute to somebody that you got your hands on blame for what happened, and I think that's what's happened to Gerardo Hernandez.
So, Gloria LaRiva, tell us what kind of trial the five men got.
Well, first, it took place in Miami, the one place that in the United States they could never have had any hope of an impartial jury. Because of the hysteria in the city, the many, many years of control by every institution, from the media to the police to the whole ruling circles of Miami, is controlled by right-wing Cuban Americans. You can't get a post like that unless you are right-wing. And within that context, there was hostile media coverage. There was, but most of all, was a pervasive atmosphere against anyone associated with Cuba. So that's the main thing. The trial took 7 months. The attorneys did a great defense for the five. But in the end, even though the prosecution on Gerardo's murder conspiracy charge actually went in the middle of trial to the 11th Circuit Court in Atlanta to appeal for a weaker instructions from the judge, because they said, we cannot convict Gerardo on your instructions. And yet the 11th Circuit upheld the tougher instructions to the jury, and yet the jury convicted on that charge because it was Miami. They were going to convict on everything. And so roughly 27 months after their conviction, which was June 2001, on August 9th, 2005, which is actually almost 4 years later, they were ruled to have been unfairly tried in Miami, and therefore all their convictions were overturned by the three-panel judge of the 11th Circuit. It was a historic decision, and maybe Richard can talk more about that. Unfortunately, the U.S. government, with the direct intervention of Alberto Gonzalez, the then Attorney General, appealed, and the full panel of the 11th Circuit, 12 judges, ruled 10-2 to reinstate the convictions, saying that Miami was fine for a trial venue. And Richard can talk more about the next stage of appeals about that, but that will be a key element, the issue of the venue of Miami.
So, Richard, given that you lost that battle, what's the next battle?
Well, we continued the appeal after that en banc ruling. We did manage to convince the court that the defendants were improperly sentenced on an espionage harm to national security basis, and that the two of the defendants had been remanded for resentencing to correct that that error. And we are now preparing to file a petition for writ of certiorari in the United States Supreme Court to address the principal issues. It's always, when you go to the Supreme Court, you can't just raise all of the problems that have happened in the case as you would on an appeal. You have to be very precise and specific to try to limit the issues you raise to those that the Supreme Court will logically take interest in. And we feel that the most important issues relate to the improper selection of the venue, the improper manipulation of the venue by the government. They took, just as an example, when the government faced a civil trial involving much less significant hot-button Cuban issues in Miami, and where they were on the opposing side of the anti-Castro interests, they recognized that the venue was improper, and they successfully requested a change of venue. But when it came to this case, they opposed, vociferously opposed the change of venue, claiming that there was absolutely nothing to indicate that there would be such hostility here. And that sort of duplicity in the manipulation of the venue, we feel, is an important factor, as well as the completely unprecedented attribution to Gerardo of responsibility for what happened 12 years ago with regard to those aircraft. It simply takes conspiracy law, it takes any concept of individual criminal responsibility and twists it into something that is really frightening.
I'm speaking with Richard Clue, who is one of the defense attorneys on the defense team of the Cuban Five. He specifically is representing Fernando Gonzalez. And on the other line is Gloria Lariva, who is coordinator of the National Committee to Free the Cuban Five. Gloria, why don't you bring us up to date on your efforts and efforts around the world to bring attention to the case of these five men. To what extent are they known internationally? To what extent is their case really being brought before the American people?
Well, I think our biggest struggle has always been any mention, which is they've been almost a secret in the U.S. media. But we have had some success over the years. Since we first formed, within days of their conviction, June 2001, the National Committee to Free the Cuban Five. There are now over
speak up a little bit, Gloria. Yeah. You're a little bit
quiet. There are now over 300 organizations around the world, committees in dozens of countries, and they are doing some great effort. For example, in just one little town in Peru, we received in our office 25,000 petitions, signatures of people from a very poor town demanding their freedom. So people do know from many efforts around the world. European, Latin American parliamentarians have signed on, well-known activists here in the United States, Danny Glover, Alice Walker. So, for example, just this month, there was a main program segment on ABC News. They're going to be featured in a major Spanish network as well, soon to come. And they were also on CNN's Situation Room, which, you know, I'm not trying to plug the big media, but they have broken through somewhat. It's due to the efforts of the people, and we're seeing all this time that once the American people know of the case of the five, their mission in saving lives, both American and Cuban, they will demand their freedom as the people demanded the freedom of Nelson Mandela and other political prisoners. So the legal case needs very much more in these days to come. before they file the appeal to the Supreme Court by the end of January. We need more and more recognition and support of their case and who these men are. They're highly, highly supported in the country of Cuba. Their families are with them. Another issue that's very important, Phil, is that the wives of two of the men, Gerardo Hernandez and Rene Gonzalez, the wives have been prohibited by the U.S. from entering the United States to visit their husbands. And that's a key case for us, too, is the right of the wives to come visit.
So they have not had a chance to have any visiting with their family?
They're prohibited by the U.S., the State Department, from entering the U.S., claiming their national security risk, which is thoroughly outrageous. It's meant to double punish Gerardo. Gerardo has two life sentences imposed on him. And in U.S. federal prison, there is no parole for life sentence. And that's, I think, our main struggle, is to get the life sentences removed and, of course, to have all of them returned to Cuba.
Richard Clue, is there any precedent for prisoner exchanges like what has been suggested by Raul Castro?
Certainly there, over the years, have been particularly in the context of an accusation of some connection to espionage, there's a long tradition of exchange of agents. Ironically, the some of the people that were convicted in Cuba were convicted on a statute, under a statute that's essentially similar to one of the statutes that the Cuban Five were convicted under, which is that they were, in essence, acting as an agent of a foreign government, and that they were receiving funds from and acting in coordination with the United States Agency for International Development. So that there would be a logical connection and a certainly a precedent for such an exchange.
So how likely do you think the Obama administration is to step up to the plate on this issue?
Well, I think there's always a question with political issues with regard to Cuba as to whether there will be some political fallout from doing what is the logical thing to do, which is to engage rather than not engage. Certainly, since the Nixon presidency, it had been pretty well established a sound American policy to not to to engage with the countries that are socialist or otherwise, not within the American economic model, and that had been a policy that has been applied, I believe, just about across the board, with one primary exception being Cuba, and clearly political pressure is what has stopped it. Hopefully, with support from both sides of the aisle, there will be some movement in the coming years to adopt a more realistic policy of engagement.
Well, Richard, it's been alleged by some that the Miami Cubans aren't the stereotypical right-wing fanatics that they have been in the past, that a younger generation of Cuban Americans, in fact, would very much like to see changes in the U.S. policy towards Cuba, particularly changing the rules about family visits of Cuban Americans to Cuba, which have been severely restricted by the Bush administration. So do you think that there might be some light on this topic if even Miami Cuban Americans, the younger generation of Cuban Americans, is changing its position?
You would certainly hope so. The I feel that there's always the sort of the fear of what the powerful interests really want, and that sort of suppresses what the actual beliefs are. And my impression is that a majority down here at this point would be very much open to, I believe, even ending the embargo.
So, Gloria, I want to give you a chance to give out maybe a website or contact information for the National Committee to Free the Cuban Five.
Yes, thank you. People can read our website that has all the very latest news, including messages from the Five for the new year, and that's freethefive.org. Five is spelled out. Again, freethefive.org. And if I can, I'd like to read just a paragraph from one of the Five in greeting to people, their supporters.
Briefly.
Yes, well, Renee says, We end this year imbued with an optimistic spirit. Today, our supporters have become a human wave that demands all around the world that we be granted by justice, and we are overwhelmed and humbled by that solidarity. Thank you very much. We will never let you down. Again, there's a great deal to do in the coming days and weeks. We will be having a focus in Washington, collecting more petitions. We've already gathered hundreds of thousands, and we thank you so much for giving more coverage and light to the case of the Cuban Five.
Thank you. Again, that website, www.freethefive.org.
Yes.
Well, Gloria LaRiva, coordinator of the National Committee to Free the Cuban Five, Richard Clue on the defense team for the Five, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Philip.
You're listening to